Welcome to Come and See, your podcast for finding truth in a world of chaos. Brought to you by Living Waters Abide Ministries. With host and founder, Richard Case, and co-host and retreat leader, Kathy Riccone. Jesus reminds us to watch for the signs of his return. Today, we will explore further what we are seeing in our times that line up with what signs he said would indicate the potential of the end and his return. We will also discuss the practical meaning of this as we watch and as a remnant prepare as he so leads. And now your host, Richard Case.
Well, good morning, everybody. This is End Times Friday, and we have our monthly update from Israel. And we got Denny, our good friend Denny, and Eric, who is, what city are you in this today?
I'm in Tel Aviv at the moment.
Tel Aviv. Great. And we have lots of things to cover. My goodness, things happen quickly and much. Interesting, Eric, that, you know, because you're now a regular, I get phone calls, you know, from people say, hey, would you ask them this? Because they so appreciate that they don't get this kind of information from regular news, and they really can't find it. So they literally tune in every time just to get caught up on it. So we so appreciate you being on. I think, Denny, you had a good beginning question that would be helpful for us to start with. And let's start there, and then we'll keep going.
So obviously there's a lot going on in various parts of the region there and all sides with Israel. And we get pieces of it in the United States. But the thing that obviously got a lot of attention was Israel's resumption of an offense in south, in Gaza. And when I looked at what the goals of this operation were, some of it was rehashing of old original goals. And so one of the questions is this new and additional value that Israel hopes to gain, or is it retaking what it already had and lost during the ceasefire?
It's a good but hard question to answer. So maybe I should probably just a little bit of background. There's a bit of a schism here in Israel between the population at large. There are demonstrations on a daily basis where there are people who do not support the government, combined with many of the hostage families, kind of merged into one protest movement, if you will, that are just basically insisting on the ceasefire immediately and get the hostages back. And the rest of the population feels like the only way to get the hostages back is to press the court in Gaza. And that's the position the government has taken. And they basically the position of the government was, we're not going to sit around, twiddle our thumbs, waiting to have meetings in Qatar or Cairo, waiting to try to negotiate something out. We'll negotiate, but we'll negotiate what they call under fire, meaning we're going to press the war, but we'll continue talking at the same time. We're not going to stop fighting or pressing the war goals while we sit and talk. So that's the main thing that's shifted. And limited ground troops have been sent in. I don't know if anything's happened with special forces or not. That's hard to know. But the main forces in the ground have gone back and started retaking this Netzarim corridor. Your listeners may remember that the IDF early in the war carved out a corridor that went east-west, slicing basically the Gaza Strip in half, north and south. And that allowed the IDF to have freedom of operations throughout the Strip. And they've started retaking that. Okay. And there's very little fighting in that category going on in terms of battles. Most of the stuff going on right now is aerial. For example, this morning, very early this morning, middle of the night, there were sirens going off in Tel Aviv and Jerusalem and areas around it because there were some rockets still launched. So it's clear Hamas still has something left to its arsenal. Hasn't all been destroyed. And so the IDF has been focusing on taking out senior members of Hamas, probably part members of their family as well, and some operational installations. And now they'll go after wherever these rockets were fired from, they'll go after that. But the war is not really intense quite yet. They haven't called up all the reserves. It's not clear how many reserve units are going to have to call up in order to fight this. But at the moment, I would say the intensity level is pretty low, at least for us. Having said that, the weather here in Israel turned a really cold spell, lots of rain. So those residents of Gaza living in tents, it can't be really pleasant at the moment.
What is the current objective? And are they concerned if they press this objective that there won't be any more release of hostages and the rest of the hostages would just be killed? What's the thought there about that?
Well, there's a fear of that, and that's why the hostage families are demonstrating as strongly as they are, because they're worried that this is going to kill the ones who are remaining alive. Now, your listeners should bear in mind that it's currently estimated that as of now, the best intelligence we have is roughly 25 living hostages remaining, or something like 25 to 30 bodies. And so they're not releasing who, you know, which ones are which category at the moment. It's possible the families know, but I don't know. So the rule of the day is that the only way to get Hamas to sit and negotiate is to release, to bring them to the table by increasing the pressure on them. So I think that's the main goal at the moment. I don't know if there are any, the intensity hasn't picked up. The government has threatened that when the activities resume in full steam, which they haven't yet, that they'll be restricting the amount of aid going in. And one mistake they made previously, and it's largely due to pressure from the Biden administration, is Israel was not withholding aid previously. They were restricting the areas in which the aid was reaching to the humanitarian corridors. But for the Biden administration, that wasn't enough. They were demanding that the aid be distributed everywhere. And the problem with being distributed everywhere is what goes elsewhere is often confiscated by Hamas. And they believe it or not, they actually sell it to their own population to make money.
Wow.
Isn't that amazing? So they take, I mean, bear in mind that Israel is not the one buying all this aid and providing it to Gaza. Most of this aid is coming through international aid organizations, some of which are U.S. funded. Some are European funded. Also, the Gulf states are funding some of this aid going in. And so Israel just providing transit and abilities for it to enter. And Hamas confiscates it, resells it, and use that money to pay their salaries of their fighters. So these fighters aren't fighting for free. They're getting a salary. So, and all those fighters that you saw on television when they were releasing the hostages, those were all uniforms being kept. And those are really untrained forces. They're really... they could not have trained in 3 months or whatever we've had from the ceasefire. There's no way they could have trained really, hardcore, fighters in this process. These are new recruits, probably, I don't know, but I'm guessing between the ages of 15 and 17, who were given a gun and asked to fire a few shots in a firing range. But they still have something that's estimated anywhere between 2,000 to 5,000 of their original forces still intact, is what it's estimated. And most of the hostages have been reporting to the press, because they're on TV a lot and being interviewed, that the whole time they were in captivity, they constantly heard, noises related to tunnels being dug. And so those things are still going on. And I don't know to what extent Hamas has expanded since its operations from the start of the ceasefire or not, but they probably have to some extent. Now, to answer your question about the danger to the hostages, of course, and this is the risky deck that the government's playing right now, is will the pressure bring back the hostages, or will the pressure encourage Hamas to kill them? And it's not fully known.
Is there a fear that Hamas is regrouping and restructuring, to just have another initiative, not necessarily not even short term, but over the next year or two, because they are allowed to come back? And
well, this is the big question. The position of the Israeli government, and I would say 90%+ of the population, is that Hamas cannot remain ruling in the Gaza Strip. Okay. And it cannot remain armed as well. And so, as your readers may have read, or listeners may have read in the paper, there was an initiative after President Trump announced his initiative about what became known as the Gaza Riviera Initiative. Egypt came back and came up with its own initiative that got endorsement from most of the Arab countries. I want to come back to that in a second. It basically, from all we can tell, in Israel is the same mold. There's nothing new in any of their initiatives. Hamas stays, doesn't get evacuated. Aid comes in, they rebuild. A few years later, Hamas attacks again. Israel comes in and destroys the place again. And it's just a circle. And the Egyptians really aren't contributing anything here constructively to change anything. Having said that, from other reports I have read, the Gulf states came back from that Arab summit livid. They were furious because they were pushing hard that the Arab plan, as you will, would require the removal of Hamas as a part of the deal, and that Hamas would not remain as any kind of effective power in the Gaza Strip, because they're not stupid. They know, I mean, as I just said, you know, question is, who's going to put up the money to rebuild Gaza? And I think that the Gulf states are smart enough to know that if Hamas is still there, then any money they put into Gaza is going to get thrown away, because Hamas has sworn to relaunch the war, and therefore Israel is going to come in and protect itself and destroy it. So who, you know, what kind of investment is that? I mean, the leaders of the Gulf state are much smarter than this. The only Gulf state that would do that is Qatar. And Qatar is a real problem that hasn't been acknowledged. I mean, I've heard several interviews with Arab leaders, all of whom are now, especially the Gulf states, are criticizing Al Jazeera, saying it's a big problem throughout the entire Middle East because of its nature of its reporting. It's just an arm for the Muslim Brotherhood. So, they see Qatar owns basically the Al Jazeera. It's not an independent news agency. It's owned by Qatar. And the message it delivers is one from the Muslim Brotherhood. Despite what it looks like, it's really not what it appears. And even the Palestinian Authority has now barred Al Jazeera from operating in Judea and Samaria, what's called the West Bank. I mean, so we're not the only ones upset with that. The bottom line is we really don't know yet where this is going to lead. There was some emergency negotiated session taking place in Doha, Qatar. Yesterday, Hamas ran off, so Israeli leaders ran off. So there's something maybe going on behind the scenes that we're not aware of.
There was a report here that Trump had tried to take direct negotiations with Hamas, and Israel is upset about that. What's the truth about all that, and where does that stand?
So there was this guy, Adam Boehner. I don't know. Just read about him. Seemed like a young guy who came here. My guess is that some initiative of the Trump administration to try to see what it would take to get the American hostages out, and I guess a few others, and by discussing things directly with Hamas. I think there were two sessions. The first one, the Israeli government was not aware of until way after the fact. The second one, the Israeli government picked up on pretty quickly, but it handled things diplomatically behind the scenes and expressed its dismay with the Trump administration, but not in public. And this guy was summarily dismissed. If you go to university, you study negotiations 101, you learn skills when it comes to negotiating. And those may work for, you know, if you're a labor negotiation and there's a strike and you're negotiating between management and labor union, it doesn't work with Hamas. I mean, you know, and the guy was a bit naive to think, he got a bit of a shock to understand just what it was like negotiating with them. I don't think he resigned. I think he was reassigned by the Trump administration in some other role. Steve Witkoff is back in the seat, juggling between this and Ukraine, I think one or two other things at his time. But he's clearly very trusted by President Trump. And so, I mean, what you read in the press is not maybe necessarily what's really going on, but he seems pretty frustrated by the situation as well from what you can read and listen to.
Is there even in private, is there a conversation that happens that says, look, this might only be resolved if we view remaining hostages as something that gets sacrificed for the good of, you know, of ending this?
In certain segments of our society, those conversations have been taking place. And I personally have not been participating in any of these demonstrations, okay? And I don't, not because I don't feel for the hostages, you know, the hostage families, basically they get airtime for free whenever they want it on the TV networks, and they get interviews with the press whenever they want it, because everybody in this country, you know, says, look, I would hate to be in their shoes. You know, this is kind of really what everyone here feels. There's an element that runs through Israeli society as kind of a Jewish value that, you know, not only values human life, but to maintain this country and to maintain our ability to draft and recruit soldiers from each generation, there's kind of unwritten understanding between all the elements of society. And that is, we will do whatever it takes to get back our soldiers, okay? Mm-hmm. And get back our people. And that's running through a lot of the threads in the society. Again, those who are out demonstrating in the streets, and there were like 100,000 this past Saturday night between Tel Aviv and Jerusalem, they're basically saying, look, Hamas should be annihilated, but get our hostages back first. And then we'll go after Hamas later. And this is there's a logic to that statement, but it also thinks, it sort of presumes that Hamas is stupid, and they're not, you know? I mean, they're not going to release the hostages knowing that even in 6 months or a year from now, we're to go back and wipe them out. So they're not stupid. So it is, it's a difficult situation for the country. At some level, it's tearing up the country apart. But I don't hear anyone talk, you know, publicly about the kind of thing that Denny just asked, that is, we're willing to sacrifice them. There are elements of the extreme right wing in this country that talk a little bit about that, but there's really no one else.
Do you think they'll, Hamas then will, what you just said was my thought is, well, they're not going to do that because they're not stupid. Will they drip them out, you know, over the next, you know, a few, you know, periodically just to satisfy something and keep their power position, what they think they have power position with?
That could be what's going on now. You know, I mean, I think Vidicoff's proposal, well, his initial one was 2 month ceasefire, release half the live hostages at the beginning and the other half at the end. And that wasn't agreeable to Hamas. And so there's probably some negotiations that are going on, like we'll trickle out, you know, five more or something like that, or, you know, something. And I don't know the numbers. My guess, if it's within reason, the government will agree, because there is an element that wants to get the hostages back. It'll let the country go through a healing process. Until that happens, it's hard for the country to go back through a healing process.
Is the, let's say, the current status of them still operating in those corridors, do you believe that Israel will be able to keep Hamas from regrouping to a stronger position over the next, you know, year or two, forgetting about what happens with the hostages, just that they're observing things, knowing that if they start to see things power up again, they're gonna try to come against them? What's your prediction with that?
I don't know if, well, in Judea and Samaria, the IDF has a large abundance of intelligence about what's happening. One of the things that Yahya Sinwar did when he took over control of Gaza, he started hanging and butchering anybody he thought, without trial, anybody he thought was informing on Hamas to the intelligence authorities here in Israel. Israel's knowledge about what's going on inside Gaza is much more limited. Therefore, it's hard to do targeted attacks without good intelligence. I talk with, you know, guys who are serving in these special forces units in Judea and Samaria. I've asked, you know, some of them are lone soldiers. I've been very involved in lone soldiers here in Israel. I've asked them, don't you ever lose sleep at night knowing that you're knocking on the door at 2 o'clock in the morning and some family that's sleeping, having to go in and ransack their house looking for somebody or some arms? And the answers came back each and every time from the guys who serve in these units is no. 99.99% of the time we go in at 2 o'clock in the morning, we find exactly what the intelligence told us we were going to find, exactly where we were going to, you know, what and where we were going to find it or who. And it was so precise. We don't have that level of intelligence in Gaza. So, and I don't know if it'll ever come back. So I don't know whether we maintain operations. I think the expectation, even of the left wing, I mean, there was an interview with a guy who leads the far left party in Israel, a guy named Yair Golan, who was a senior member of the army, but who's very far on the left, who said, in any time for the foreseeable future, Israel has to maintain security management for both Judea, Samaria, as well as Gaza. He wants to see a civilian control run by something like the Palestinian Authority in all three locations. And that's the left-wing position. Israel still has security control over all three, because no one here believes that the Palestinian Authority or any other force can keep the terrorists at bay, other than the IDF.
So do you think that Gaza is just going to kind of be status quo for a while, and they're not going to have a big group of Hamas being able to attack Israel again? It's just going to kind of survive, and Israel can't do much about it other than just watch it?
Well, you know, right now, the population of Gaza is pretty much living in tents, you know, and that's been going on now for about a year, a little more than a year. At some point, those people are going to get really, you know, upset about the situation, and I don't know what they'll do. Hamas has pretty ruthless control over their lives, but, you know, I don't know if it's a manageable situation. I honestly don't know how this is going to unfold, and I'm not sure the government does either. I mean, there's talk, news reports about members of our government who just got back from Washington, where they discussed where they're going to send the Gazans during this period after the war to rebuild it. My personal opinion is this is a bit of fooling yourself. It's hard. There's also misinterpretation, because By international law, the people living in Gaza should be given a choice. Okay, do you want to continue living there, or do you want to, you know, try to be resettled someplace else in the world? Okay, and all the polls suggest that at least half would want to settle someplace else in the world. Okay, and legitimately, they should be given that choice. They shouldn't necessarily be forced out. There are elements of Israeli society on the far right that would like to see that, but I don't see how that's going to happen. But they should be given a choice. You know, these people who believe this thing in Israel are looking for countries that'll take them. But right now, I don't think they found any. There's talk, but I don't think there's anything real.
So it sounds like the, you know, the view toward Gaza is that it's going to continue to just kind of be messy. Nothing really much happened. And Israel, all they're going to do is observe to make sure in their mind that Hamas does not come back into a position where they can actively attack Israel. Is that?
Yeah. They're, I mean, the army is taking, they're rebuilding. They're basically lined out of no man's land, the area around the perimeter of Gaza that encroaches into Gaza. And they're shooting to fire anybody who goes across it now. And they're going to do what they can to, you know, to make sure that, you know, the attack can't happen again. But the residents there are starting to settle back, and there's some rebuilding going on in those communities, and there's something going on in the north as well. Actually, the north is more interesting right now. What's going on inside?
Before you get into that, yeah. We're out of time. We want to pick this up in our next session, actually.
Okay.
We'll talk about Hezbollah of the north, and then we want to talk about Iran, which is kind of a big topic here in America about what's going on with nuclear development and what Trump is going to do with Netanyahu. Thank you so much for telling us. You know, we just listened to this, Denny. And do you have any summarized thoughts about what you've heard about Gaza? How do we view Gaza? It's hard to understand.
The one thing is that I'm taking from what Eric is saying is that Israel believes they've effectively cut off the flow of weapons or weapons materials or money coming in. I'm assuming, is that true, Eric? Because the sort of the status quo, I guess, could go on for a long time as long as they're not able to continue moving new armaments of some kind or build armaments.
Well, you know, when you have like 600 trucks of material going into Gaza on a daily basis, you can't effectively inspect everything. So there is some smuggling likely going on in those trucks, and I just don't know how much, and I'm not sure the IDF knows how much. So, and in terms of money, the whole thing is really sick. If you pull yourself back, the whole situation is just sick. For 75 years, it's been sick. You know, you have a society that basically refuses to acknowledge, you know, an Israel along its side and continues to want to fight. Okay, because it's on its TV stations and its radio programs and so on, they're told that they can take back this land whenever they want, okay, and they should. Okay, I mean, that's what they think. Okay, that's what you know. The hostages come back and say there are no civilians inside Gaza. They're all terrorists because the, you know, 4-year-olds are coming up to these hostages and telling them, "If I had a knife, I would kill you." This is what is going on.
Wow.
So this is a society. They don't produce anything that anyone in the world wants to buy. Think about that. They created an environment that depends solely upon the aid it gets given by other parts of the world. And that's all. And that's been going on for, it's never happened before, 75 years, nonstop. It's a society that creates nothing, doesn't build anything, doesn't create products or services that anyone in the world wants to buy. It's only innovation is figuring out how innovatively to kill Jews. That's all they figured out. Yeah. It's innovative. And so, if you step back and look at it, it's like I use the word topsy turvy, like a scene from Gilbert and Sullivan musical. It's totally crazy.
Yeah,
I mean, it's crazy. The world's created something totally, the UN in particular, something totally crazy that makes no sense.
No, yeah, it's interesting. Well, thank you so much for sharing all about that. We'll be processing, following that, of course, and we'll come back. Please come back for session two because Eric's going to get into Hezbollah, Lebanon, and Iran, and these are big topics of what's going on because actually the activity has kind of shifted to the north and to Iran. So we'll come back to that. So Eric, thank you so much, and we will pick you up next week.
Yeah, thanks so much for joining us, listeners. If you have questions from today's broadcast, send them in to us at questions@abideministries.com. And like, we would love to talk about them and even bring them to Eric and Denny and let them elaborate more on those. So yeah. Thanks again. Look forward to seeing you next time.
Thank you for joining us for today's episode of Come and See, your podcast for truth in a world of chaos. Brought to you by Living Waters Abide Ministries. Send us your questions and comments and tune in tomorrow for more answers to your personal questions about living life in God's truth. Remember, God's will is best and none better. His truth brings peace in this world of chaos.